Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Debbie Verney and
Dave Kubikin. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. We're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good.
We have a lot going on.
We do.
A lot going on. So there's news. I want to get to Tom Petty at some point if we have time. I want to take everyone's calls at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. But the office has just been really, really busy, and there's good busy and there's bad busy in our profession. And this is like kind of a bad busy. I'm not complaining, but we have a lot of very difficult fact patterns that our clients are going through. And it's leading to, us doing what we do and helping them. But it really makes it more important for clients to reach out to us and be proactive whenever they can.
And plan ahead.
Plan ahead. That's the theme.
Definitely planning ahead. And we've got, for those of you that are our clients.
Thank you and to them. And a lot of them listen all the time, which is really cool.
Yes, because we have them call in. We had a bunch of them call in last week after the show when Harry was talking about the star exemption and the changes in that. So we had quite a few phone calls this week with a little bit more interpretation of exactly what's going on. But we also have our client seminars that are coming up at the end of the month. And if you are our client, oh my gosh, it's Saturday. Anyway, and you didn't receive an invitation, make sure you give Stacy a call so you get one. And for those of you that did receive them, you'll see that we have a guest speaker. We have the Alzheimer's Association is going to come in and talk, but we're also presenting on four other topics. So we're going to be talking about the changes to IRAs, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about giving your estate fairly, right?
Well, yeah, fairly versus equally. So... let's say the topics and we'll kind of preview all of them.
Prequel?
A prequel, yes.
And then staying at home.
Yeah, the community Medicaid, of course. Everyone should get used to that. That's going to be a topic we talk about until the program doesn't exist anymore because it's that good.
And Harry was making fun of me because I was like, I'm going to title it There's No Place Like Home. And he's like, the whole Wizard of Oz theme thing again. Mm. Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I think so. And then the other one is giving your grandchildren a start in life.
Right, right. And you kind of buried the lead a little bit. We do have, we don't often have a guest speaker, but we will have a guest speaker this time around. And each location, we have three locations where we're doing these seminars. It'll be someone representing the Alzheimer's Association or related entity, and they're talking about 10 signs. It's not to scare people. It's not for people to check off on the list. Oh my gosh. But it's about being proactive because in our profession and also when it comes to actual care, the earlier you can diagnose something like that, the earlier you can prepare emotionally and family can adjust and everything that's got to get done. But on our end, you could plan legally and save a whole boatload of assets if you need long-term care.
Right. If you plan ahead. And it's really sad. It's like you said, we've been busy, and I've had a lot of people that have come in that have loved ones that basically it's like someone turned the light bulb off. You know what they say? It's they were fine a year ago. We were doing this, that, and the other. We were traveling. We're having a great time. And then all of a sudden, it just was different. And then they get diagnosed. And sometimes it progresses very quickly, and sometimes it progresses very slowly. But if you've planned ahead, then... you're kind of ready for that. I don't know if anybody could ever be ready for that.
Well, it's weird because over the years, there have been fact patterns where we have someone be, there was a fall or there was some traumatic event that somebody has at home or unrelated to cognitive stuff. It has nothing to do with anything. But it somehow triggers it. And all of a sudden, that's the issue. The issue isn't that there's a broken hip or something like that. The issue is that now there's full-on dementia because we had no idea.
Right.
And it was always kind of there, but this other event brought it out.
That's true.
You have no idea when that's going to happen.
No, we don't have a crystal ball. So we can go on and on forever, which we will. But you could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590.
Now, Debbie, you know, just for the... First of all, if you're not a client, there's plenty of time to still become a client.
That's it. And still before, come to the
seminars.
A client seminar.
If you are a client and they're friends of yours that aren't clients and you really think that they might need a little awakening and they should hear some of these things, you're more than welcome to bring them to our seminars. Again, these are the client appreciation events, June 20th. That's a Thursday. We'll be at the Best Western in Kingston. That's with the super best. It's a huge room. And the following week on the 25th of June, we're going to be at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. Following day, June 26th, we're going to be at the Albany Marriott on Wolf Road. And then kind of immediately following these seminars, when we do our normal seminars, our quote-unquote normal seminars, the topic's going to be aging in place, and we're going to kind of piggyback off of the 10 minutes we talk about community Medicaid at the client event with an hour and 10 minutes, maybe even more if I'm talking, or Harry's talking, about aging in place, you know, like this A to Z.
Right, and those are going to be in August. So you guys, we're not going to do any seminars other than our client seminars until August. And those, again, we're going to be on aging in place. There's going to be one on August 13th. That seems like so far away.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about August 13th.
August 13th, that's going to be in Clifton Park at 2 in the afternoon. The 14th, 10 in the morning at Washington Ave. And that's the Marriott, right?
Yep.
And then the 14th at Glenn Sanders. That one's in the evening at 6:30. And then there's one on the 15th at East Greenbush at 2 in the afternoon. And then there's going to be one August 1st. At the Best Western Plus. So same place.
That's right.
That's August 1st in Kingston. So we've got a lot of stuff lined up. But we really, if you're a client, we really want you to come to the client seminar. We've got some really cool topics. A lot of people that got the invitation just said, oh, so you're just going to be talking about Alzheimer's. We're like, no. That's our special guest.
Yeah.
But we are going to be talking about a lot of different things. And with the changes, the proposed changes in the distributions on IRAs, it could be a very interesting topic at that point.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've heard Dave talking about it in his show for a couple weeks now that this was coming down the pike. And it looks like, if I listen carefully enough, that it's just gonna happen. It's just a matter of when that both houses of Congress have considered different bills that essentially do some of the same things when it comes to eliminating the full stretch that someone may get when they inherit an IRA. Might be a good time, Debbie, you know, absent getting a phone call, to maybe lightly preview some of these topics as Ben writes the name of our caller here. So my timing is off as usual.
That's okay. We got a caller. That's good.
So we have Gerard. Hello, Gerard. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
What's going on?
You?
Oh, very good. It's sunny outside. No rain in the forecast.
I was going to say, where have you been if it's sunny outside and there's no rain? It's raining at my house.
Oh, no. It's nice here. It's going to be a nice day today, Ben.
Showers and storms later.
Oh, yeah. A couple of days.
All right. Well, anyway, what's going on, Gerard? What could we do for you?
Well, I have a question. I'm in the process of establishing a trust.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I'm consolidating a number of accounts, et cetera, including a savings account. Now, what do I do with the interest from the savings account? Does that go into the trust, or should that go into me directly?
Okay. Well, first, thanks for the phone call. And we get this a lot, Debbie. The question is, okay, we set up a trust, we got to put some stuff in it, the house will go in perhaps, and maybe some financial accounts. What does that mean for my dividends, for my interest, for my income? What and how does it change? And it's pretty simple. You are still going to be reporting on your individual income tax returns each and every dollar of dividends and interest and income that the trust assets receive. And that's not because we said so, it's because the trust says so. On the very first page of our trusts, at least, it says you are an income beneficiary of that trust. So next step is, do you take that money or not? You can, if you wanted to, essentially reinvest those dollars and put them in to the trust if you wanted to. You can take them out. But regardless of what you do, you're going to be paying income taxes on those dollars. And that's great for during your life, because we want people to still have income as they're planning for their needs. But more importantly, Debbie, it also preserves what's called a step up in the tax basis of your property. Meaning one day when you're not here anymore, your heirs, your beneficiaries are going to receive those assets, those stocks, for example, as if they bought it for the value it had the day that the person passed away. It means that if you sold the Apple stock for $1,000 instead of $1 when you bought it, you're going to avoid any capital gains taxes. So what our trusts try to do is continue the good stuff, the good tax rules that impact you, while also protecting the assets.
So did that answer your question?
No, he's already off.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
He went away.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Thank you for the question, Gerard. And we do get that a lot, Debbie. You know, and one of the potential cons of doing a trust, or perceived cons, is, you know, losing control or losing the benefit of your assets. And if either one of those things was actually true, I would never tell anyone to do a trust. But the fact is, you still get to control everything, and you still get to enjoy your income. Not bad.
No, it's not bad. I was home in Missouri, and I was talking to my mom. And they, in Missouri, you can do what's called a beneficiary deed. Mm-hmm. So basically, you can do the deed. You can prepare the deed.
Yeah.
And whenever the person passes away, it automatically vests in the people that are the beneficiaries, but they don't own the house. Like here, where you deed it to someone and then you reserve a life estate. So completely differently. So we were talking about it, and I said something about trusts and stuff like that. And she goes, oh, well, I never even thought about a trust. She goes, why wouldn't everyone do that? And I said, exactly.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't everyone do that? So everything that she's got set up will avoid probate. But if something happened to her and she had to go into a nursing home, then her assets, they're not protected, because the beneficiary deed, she still owns the house. It's just when she passes, it would go to my sister and I.
Hmm. We have to be really good at these conversations. Conversations where we're able to really explain what the trust does. Without coming off as if we're trying to, like, sell a trust. We don't care what you do, right?
No,
do a trust,
whatever's
great.
Best for
you.
You
want to do a will? Fantastic. You want to do nothing? Sounds good. It's more of just making sure people understand, because I want people to make the decisions for the right reasons and take into account facts as opposed to what they've heard. And at the seminars, usually I'll say, okay, what does irrevocable mean? And everyone just yell it out. And the two things that come up the most are, you can't change it,
mm-hmm.
and you can't undo it. And, you know, you could do both. And you're going to say, well, wait a minute, it's called irrevocable for a reason. Yes, that applies to a lot of different parts of the trust. But when it comes to you being the boss at the end of the day, you still kind of control everything. So it's that constant battle that we have of educating people and trying to not, you know, have them shake their head and see that they're completely lost in the weeds, because what we're explaining is so heavy.
We have a caller. We have Howard from Saratoga. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Very good. I called to ask you, I have a trust, irrevocable trust. Do I have to make out a separate tax form for it?
So the answer, I guess the short answer is yes. The long answer is longer.
What do you have in your trust?
I have dividends.
Mm-hmm.
Some Fidelity stuff and Pershing stuff. That's it.
And if I could ask you, do you have essentially a Medicaid trust? Is that the kind of trust you have?
I got an irrevocable trust. I don't know if it's Medicaid. I don't think.
Did we do your trust?
Excuse me?
Are you our client?
No. I've had it done. I mean, I'm almost in my fifth year of look back. I got one more.
Oh,
year.
Wonderful. Okay, so if the look back matters, then chances are that it is what we would call a Medicaid trust. You still get the dividends, right?
That's correct. I take them out and I use them as for income for me, so I claim it. But I had to make out a separate tax form for my trust because the numbers, they say the numbers aren't the same. Your Social Security number isn't, and the number on the trust are different. So
that's
a
right.
red flag up to the IRS.
Right, and that's what is normal, right? We create a, well, we acquire a tax ID number for the trust. The big thing with this kind of trust, and it sounds like you have the kind of trust that we do, so I'll kind of put the caveat on, if it was a trust like ours, and we'll assume it is for the moment, there isn't an obligation for the trust to pay any taxes. The trust is not going to pay taxes on any of those incidents of income, dividends, interest. You're going to pay those taxes on your individual income tax form.
Correct, yes.
But where there technically is a requirement for a tax return to be filed by the trust, even though the trust isn't going to be paying any income tax.
Okay.
So to answer your question in the longer way, it's yes, there's an obligation for a tax return. No, the trust is not going to be paying any taxes. You will still be paying taxes. Perhaps your accountant will charge an extra $100 or something to put together the form that does not end up paying any taxes anyway.
Yeah, that was the thing. I had it done in Florida because I was, sorry to explain, but they tell me that the trust don't make any money, but the income it does make, I got to claim on my income tax. So I have to make the income tax form for the trust, and then that goes to my personal.
That's right.
Okay.
Very Thanks good. For the call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For helping me.
Thank you.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
It's very confusing, and a lot of people. Well, we tell them if it's just got real property in it, right, it's not generating any income, then you don't necessarily need to file. It's a Form 1041, whereas we file a 1040 personally. A 1041 is what the trust files. And if you're our client, generally what we do every year is we put together what we call a tax packet. So we get calls at the end of January, and Stacy mails out tax packets to our clients that tells them how they need to file their taxes. And a lot of times, even when I get CPAs that call me and say, what have you done?
Yeah.
I'll send them the tax packet and they're like, oh, well, that totally makes sense now, because it's very confusing for our clients.
Absolutely. Debbie, if we could just, before our, 10 minutes from now, we have a break. Let's get into some of these seminar topics, if you don't mind. The 10 signs of Alzheimer's is pretty self-explanatory, and we're not going to give you the 10 signs, otherwise you're not coming to the seminar.
That's right, they'll be surprised.
That's right, it's a surprise. Maybe we'll tell you the sixth sign, just number six.
Just number six?
Mm-hmm. No, maybe not.
No, not number six. By the way, we have a cool gift this year, too.
We do. I will be using lots of it, and I will be stealing some of them and bringing them home. If you ever come to my house and you open up the cupboard, you're just going to see Herzog mugs.
Now you told them what it was.
Well, they don't know what color it is.
Yeah.
You mean the blue one?
No, not. Well, maybe. Maybe they're blue. So, Debbie, community Medicaid, right? How to stay at home longer.
Uh-huh.
The overview of that would be kind of what? What are the key points that we're going to kind of be hitting? And then obviously hitting them extremely harder when we do the actual seminars on aging in place a month or two later.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things you can say, but Dave likes to call it care on your couch.
Care on your couch.
So that you can stay home.
Patent pending.
Patent pending.
Patent pending.
It'll be a copyright.
Or trademark.
Yeah.
I like saying patent pending.
It sounds too cool.
Yeah.
So with community Medicaid, say, for instance, I had clients that came in yesterday and her husband basically is up all night, right? So he's up all night. She wants to keep him home. He has Alzheimer's. He's what she called an escape artist, which I thought was kind of cool whenever she was saying that, he sometimes escapes. And she can't get any sleep,
yeah,
right? She has somebody. She got a small grant. She got 90 hours for a year. And so she has someone that comes in every once in a while, but she doesn't really have anybody to take care of him. So what she's looking for is someone to be there at night to take care of him. And Kim and I met with her yesterday, and we said, that with the home care, with community Medicaid, she could get somebody to be there at night, and then she could actually have him go to an adult daycare during the day, some of the days, right?
Yeah.
But the adult daycare hours don't count towards the hours that he would get for community Medicaid. So they're kind of like a bonus.
And was Kim's thought and your thought that because it's on the dementia side of things, as opposed to just not being able to move side of things, that like the diversion waiver program, like they'll get double digit hours a day.
Yep, that's what she was talking about. I mean, wow. Kim did the analysis when she was sitting there, and she said, you know, that he was going to get double digit hours, plus he could do the adult daycare, plus they would do transportation. So, I mean, this poor woman, it's like her eyes just lit up, and her son was there with her too. And they were just like, really? We can do that? We can get some help? And, you know, everyone had told her, no, no, no. She had gone to an attorney that didn't do elder law, and he had said, no, 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 you're not going to qualify.
You have too much.
You have too much in income,
too much in assets.
Yeah. And so we're going to have to do a pooled trust, which if you want to know about those, you're going to have to come to one of the seminars.
Oh, Mary, that's, see, you see that, Ben? That's quality right there.
That was very, very good.
So, I mean, but it was just amazing because they came in and she started talking about her husband and you could tell she wanted to keep him home. You know, no one wants to go into a nursing home.
Yeah.
And she wanted to have some quality of life, though. And once we started meeting with her and telling her what the options were and how we could preserve her assets and we could preserve her income, you know, then her eyes lit up and then she started talking about, well, and the son was like, well, once we get that taken care of, then we have to look at what we're going to do with mom, because where she's living now isn't really someplace, you know, that's good for her. It's not all on one level. She has lots of stairs. It's a big property. She's going to have to mow and do this stuff. And so I'm like, well, let's get dad taken care of.
Yep.
And then after we get dad all taken care of, then we'll look at, do we want to, you know, move into some place that's all on one level with a little bit less property? So it's a stepping stone.
So, Debbie, you're glossing over what I think is one of the most important things. Creating the eligibility for her husband to get approved by Medicaid, maneuvering the assets however they need to, maybe creating a trust. None of those things prevent her and him from moving the next month to whatever place they want to. When we talk about home care, you're not literally talking about that home forever and ever. You're talking about a place that's not assisted living or a nursing home. It could be a senior apartment. It could be a condo. It could be a smaller house. It could be the house that they lived in for 30 years. Any of those, all of those apply, and you can move from one to the other. The program really is that fantastic. And, you know, she may have been really happy about 90 hours a year through a grant. If she gets 13 hours a day, which I don't think is crazy based on the waiver program that she'll qualify for, that's 91 hours a week that she's going to be getting. Not a year, a week.
Oh, I know. She said she'd already,
that's amazing.
She'd already gone through her 90 hours.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, she's been private paying
someone. That must have been a good first week of January. Seriously.
You know, that's what she said. She said it was difficult. You know, it's one of those things when it's like someone says you've got 90 hours of freedom. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, I can go grocery shopping and I can... I mean, that's the thing. You don't think about all the things that you can't do.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, we have an article out there just dedicated kind of to caregivers. And it's, you know, we're trying to balance saying... That's really fantastic that you want to be the caregiver and all, and you're saying no nursing home, all that stuff. It's not all or nothing. It's not, I have to provide every hour of care or it's a nursing home. There's this whole world where you can have other caretakers out there or these day programs out there. And when it comes to how you're going to pay for it, you know, that's where this program comes in. Because, you know, Kim says it very frequently. 24/7 home care is more expensive than being in a nursing home if you're private paying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because $20 an hour times, you do the math, it's going to be $14,000, $15,000 a month for that kind of care. Hearing that shouldn't mean, oh my God, well then we have no choice but the nursing home. Your choice is actually this program. And for our clients out there, if you want to call our office at 518-465-7581, and Stacy can reserve your seat at one of our three seminars where, you know, whether it's 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, Debbie will be talking about these topics, you know, community Medicaid. And then absolutely, it's a must that you guys come just for the, it's all free. It's just get your ducks in a row, get your information about that program. And when I meet with people who are doing a Medicaid trust and things aren't fantastic, physically or mentally, but you know, they're being proactive. I spend, you know, 10, 15 minutes, Debbie, just talking about community Medicaid, and they say, wait a minute, well, we don't need that right now. I said, you're right. You don't. You just need to know it exists because most people don't realize that. And I bet you get a lot of, that can't be right. Well, what's the catch?
No, it's like, is this new?
Yeah.
Is this new? I've never heard of this. Are you sure? You know, so it's one of those things where you've got to make sure that people are educated.
Absolutely. In addition to that topic, right, care at home, one of the other topics is fair versus equal, and I think I might be covering that topic during the seminar. And, in divorces, there's something called equitable distribution, which is how your assets get split. And it's not equal distribution. That's not the words they use. They use equitable because equitable means, or theoretically means fair. It's not always fair.
But
a lot of people feel an obligation to treat all of their kids the same when they pass away and all their documents to be the same. And they want, all five kids to be co-trustees. And I'm ready to do things to myself when I hear that because that's really difficult to have five trustees. But, you just need to have an overall plan. I want people to take into consideration the assets that will never even see the inside of their trust and who the beneficiaries are there. I want them to think about during the lives of their kids how they've helped out the kids and whether that's a factor or not. I want them to not consider some things, right? Ideally, I don't want people to think about, well, my son, he drives a nice car. He's doing great, or this one, he's always got a nice shirt on him and he's never asked for money. So he must be doing good. I'll really take care of the people who have been asking or aren't, who I know or I think aren't doing well. And the fact is you never really know how people are doing.
No.
And you have every right to leave things however you want to. That's your job, not our job. But what we want to make sure is that you're considering the right things and you're not making assumptions that maybe are not proper.
True.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
Two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm are going to be here for the next half hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you could be the first caller this half hour.
This half hour
at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590, which is toll-free. We were talking in the first half hour about our client seminars and aging in place and community Medicaid. And you were alluding to the topic that you're going to talk about at the client seminar, which is?
Fair versus equal. I think that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Fair versus equal is yours.
Yeah. So, we started at the first half hour and then you affirmed everything I said by saying true. So thank you. But it's really interesting. Forget the saving the money part and avoiding probate part, all that stuff. I always get a kick personally out of meeting families and meeting with, couples and kind of getting a little glimpse into what makes them tick. And I always like to look at the age range between the kids, having just had the second child, I'm like, is five years spread too big, too little? Are they going to be friends? It's always very interesting to me. The way people treat their kids in their documents is very interesting. I'll put it that way. And we have a client where there's seven children, Debbie, seven kids. And when it comes to dividing assets, it's only going to five of them, because two of them would get knocked off of their benefits from the government potentially. And there I'm like, hey, everyone, you don't have to do that.
Right.
You don't have to do that. You could leave it equally to everyone. But they're just going to go this route because it's the way mom wanted, and so be it. What, you know, whatever. But that's part of it, because certainly you're not treating all seven kids equally in that instance. But in mom's determination, the two other kids that aren't going to be getting have been living with her and will continue to live with her and not really have any obligations. So because of that, in her mind, that's what equitable is. And our answer is, sounds good. Just know there's these other options. So you don't have to think, well, I'm doing them a favor by not having them be knocked off their benefits. So that's a little bit about what we're talking about on that front. Our other two topics, other than our special guest that will be speaking at the events, will be retirement planning. And that gets really, really interesting, because when we're doing Medicaid planning, in particular crisis planning, sometimes we're telling people to cash out Roth IRAs and or even smaller IRAs that they have, and we'll get angry calls from accountants or financial advisors. This is, you know, growing tax-free, what are you doing, et cetera. And those decisions aren't just done by us or aren't just suggested by us. We also consider the ages of the kids and how those kids will be treating those retirements in the future. More on that in a second. We do have Nikki in Saratoga Springs waiting patiently. Nikki. Hey, Nikki.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. What can we help you with?
I was told to Medicaid that if they put a claim on an estate, that if there's a disabled child of any age, that they cannot collect. Is that true?
So let's break it up for a second. So Medicaid will put a lien on your estate. If they've paid out during your life, they're going to put a lien on the estate. And one of our goals, among other things, is to avoid having an estate, avoid having probate. Okay? So
Okay. There's
that.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about your estate, you're talking about your stuff now, or are you talking about after you're dead?
No, my dad actually passed away in the estate. Medicaid put a small lien on it.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister is totally disabled.
Okay, so that's kind of like a double-edged question, because if she was disabled whenever he went into the nursing home, right? He was in a nursing home?
Yeah, it's just for a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a disabled child exemption, so we could have taken advantage of that. But if he was only in the nursing home for a month and then he passed away, yeah, they're going to put a lien on his estate for the amount that is owed.
Yeah, so typically we're kind of dancing around your question, it would matter that there's a disabled child, but the time that it would matter is during the application process and moving assets around during his life and not having Medicaid count them against him. We use disabled kids all the time, transferring houses to them in a way where we could protect all of the value of the house without a lien being put on it. Here, it already is part of his estate of what we're hearing, right? He died owning some assets that are in probate, that lien is going to trump the fact that there's a disabled child who survived him.
Yes.
Okay.
But thanks for the question. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Have
Take
a good
care.
Day.
Have a great weekend.
Yep. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Another caller.
Jim from New Scotland. Good morning, Jim.
Hi. Good morning. I've got a irrevocable trust, and my house is in the irrevocable trust. And I have a home equity credit line on the house. What happens in a home equity credit line if I try to use it? Or should I even try to use it?
Well, it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, if you already have the line of credit, use it. You know, if you need to use it. That's not a problem. You know, that line of credit, it's attached to the property, right? It's secured by the property. So that doesn't change. You know, it's still secured by the property. You have the personal obligation to pay on that home equity line of credit if you use it. That doesn't change. All that's changed is that the way that you benefit from the house, the way that you have exclusive use and occupancy of the house, is through something called this trust. So it really shouldn't impact using it at all. Where we've seen an impact sometimes is where banks get freaked out and they don't want to offer a line of credit because the house is currently owned by a trust. So someone says, I'm going to try to tap into the equity by creating a home equity line of credit that does not exist currently. And we find, and Debbie, correct me if I'm wrong on what you've heard, but some of the smaller banks or medium-sized banks that kind of know what these trusts do and how they do it won't give you too hard of a time in accessing equity in your house, even right. though it's in a trust.
There's a lot of there are some banks that will not give you a home equity loan if you have your house in a trust, but there are banks that will give you a loan. So if you already have a loan on your house and then you put it into the trust, it shouldn't be an issue using your home equity line of credit.
How does that affect Medicaid eligibility? Is that considered is it the equity line of credit considered income?
No, because it's an asset. So once it's in the trust, I mean, the house is owned by the trust, the loan is against the house, it's not income. But if you take money out, say you took $20,000 advance on your home equity loan and then you didn't spend it and you had to go into a nursing home, then that would be counted as an asset if you were applying for Medicaid.
That's what I figured. That if I was applying for Medicaid, then if I used that home equity line of credit for anything, if I took any money out, that would be considered income, right?
Well, no. So you have an asset in the trust called a house. It looks like a house, but it's really a pile of money that is in the shape of a house, right? It's $200,000, $300,000. That's the value of the asset in your trust. So that home equity line of credit that you start using is reducing the equity you have in that house. It's lowering the value that the trust has, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so you take that money out. You're not taking it out because you want to say, hey, Medicaid, I got $20,000 I just pulled out. That would make no sense. You're going to use the home equity line of credit because you're redoing the kitchen or you're doing something in the backyard or you just need it for something else, right? So you'll spend the money. And Medicaid's okay with you spending the money. They're just not okay with you spending it on me or taking me on a trip, right? They don't want you to give the money away, but they're okay with you using it for things.
Yeah,
so if you make that decision to access equity in your house, that's lowering the value, the net value of your house in the trust. And the money that leaves, you know, the equity that you lose is essentially going into your own hands. It's not income because you didn't work for it, right? You're just accessing equity. It turns into, as Debbie said, a resource. It's a pile of money that's now in your hands. So I'd say to you, if you're going to access equity from your trust assets, do so because you're going to spend it on things. Don't do so you could then have an extra $20,000 sitting in your bank account, because if you need a nursing home in the future, Medicaid's going to say, hey, it's a nice $20,000 you got there.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for the call.
It was a great question.
Can I just say that I'm always going to remember now that you have a pile of money and it's shaped like a house.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down,
Dave.
So I don't forget that. That's great.
I love that.
I think it's great.
Oh, thank you.
It will always remind me, you know, I have a pile of money and it's shaped like a house. I just love it. That's great.
Rolls of quarters. It looks like Lincoln Logs. Yeah, it's a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's easier to remember that because people are so focused on it being a house.
Right.
Oh my God, it's my house is in there. And it's, yes, it's in there, but if you ever sold your house and it's in the trust, you could do that. The money from the sale remains in the trust. So if it's just a house, you know, money in the shape of a house, it's a lot easier to remember.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
That was good.
Patent pending on that one as well.
Copyright. Anyway, you have a you have a lot of good analogies. I like your analogy with the box, which I've used, you know, with the box with the lid and the box without the lid for the revocable and irrevocable trust. I have to admit that I have used that.
Well, the copyright is pending, so you can use it. So back to these seminars. And again, if you want to, if you're a client of ours and you want to join us for the client appreciation event, and really you should be doing that every year. It's not just the giveaways. We're trying to do topics that we don't go, you know, into in depth in our normal estate planning seminars. And one of those topics is kind of how to maximize your retirement. And it's not like, do I annuitize this? Do I invest here? That's not us. You know, you talk to Dave Kopeck, you talk to your financial advisor. That's what you do for that stuff. What we're talking about here is there's going to be taxes that our beneficiaries pay one day when they inherit an IRA. There are going to be taxes that you deal with if you liquidate your IRA during your life. There's, an impact to not having tax-free dollars grow in the form of a Roth IRA. And all of those are part of the equation that determines how do we get you qualified for Medicaid. What do we put in the trust today? What do we wait and not put in the trust in, and we break only in the case of an emergency? And so I think those 10 minutes, and I think Jane Marie probably will be doing them because she's very good at doing that kind of thing, is going to be a little denser. Probably the thickest part of our client appreciation of it, but maybe the most valuable to people because of what it may mean financially for you or for the kids in the future. Again, our events are June 20th in Kingston, June 25th at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, and June 26th at the Albany Marriott on Wolf Road. And again, you can call our office 518-465-7581 to reserve your seat at one of those. If you're not a client and you're saying, oh man, I wish I was a client.
I want to be a client.
Yeah, well, you know, we could figure something out in the next couple of weeks. But definitely we'd love to have you come to our follow-up seminars. That'll be, unfortunately, not till August. But fear not, Debbie. They could just come in to meet with you for an hour for free.
They could. I would be more than happy to meet with them for an hour for
and
free.
And why go to a seminar for an hour with other people asking questions, you know?
But
who wants that, right? Just go and see Debbie for a free consult.
But, you know, the seminars are fun because it's one of those things where you sit there and people ask questions and you're like, wow, I never thought about that. That's something that could happen to me. That's something that could happen to me.
Hopefully you're not thinking about it.
No, I try not to think about that. No, yeah. It's interesting because, again, when I was home, I went to see my mom and then we went to Wisconsin to see my niece graduate from college. And when I went to my mom's house, we were trying to have the conversation and everything like that. And I was looking around the house going, I wonder where all my mom's stuff is. I wonder where all the checkbooks are and the bank statements and stuff like that in case something happened. And I started thinking about it. I thought, you know, this would be a great seminar. It's like, you know, what my family should know. So I put together a seminar for continuing ed for Saratoga that's going to be this fall. And so I sent them the proposal and everything, and they emailed me back and they're like, can we change the title a little bit? Because I had it, you know, what my family should know. And I'm like, yeah.
What do they change it to?
They're changing it before disaster strikes.
Oh, that's okay. I used to do a continuing ed that was called After the Storm. And this is the precursor, the prequel.
Yeah.
I like it. Very nice. Well, the final of the topics that the attorneys will be talking about, obviously, again, we have a very special presenter from the Alzheimer's Association talking about 10 signs of Alzheimer's. It's really, really good. I've heard it before. It's not depressing, I promise you. It's just being proactive. You know, sometimes people will say to us, my dad has dementia. And we say, oh, was he diagnosed? And say, no, he just kind of forgets every now and then. It's like, well, maybe it's age-related and it has nothing to do with this disease. And the words matter, right? Mm-hmm. It really matters on these different programs. But our final topic is setting up your kids or grandkids in the future. And this is a really, I think Harry's going to be talking about it. I think it's incredibly important, Debbie, because you may be doing more harm to your grandkids than help if you leave them money outright.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
It's a nice thought.
It's a nice thought, and a lot of people want to help their grandkids, and a lot of people think that their kids are doing fine, and they want to help their grandkids. Again, kind of back to what you talked about earlier, do you really know that your kids are doing that well? You know, I have people come in that say, well, my one son is a orthopedic surgeon, and my daughter is a psychologist, and so they've all got these big jobs, and they've all got this money, and they don't think about, they've also got probably a lot of student debt, right? Mm. So they're like, well, I'm just going to skip over my kids and I'm going to leave my money to my grandkids. Well, how old are your grandkids? Well, they're 5, 7, 13, 14. And really, you want to leave them money? So what age do you want them to get money?
Well, but so Debbie, it's not don't leave them money necessarily. It's you got to
do it
really,
correctly.
Yeah, do it the right way. Because, you know, if I have... If I'm 80 and I have a life insurance account, I say, you know what? I'm not going to have my kids be the backup to my spouse. I'm going to have my grandkids. All five of them are going to be my joint backups on my life insurance.
And how old are they?
Right. They're just getting that money. And yeah. If they're under 18, that's an issue. If they're over 18, that's an issue because they might be a knucklehead. You know, Ben might like this. We have a knucklehead provision in our documents, Ben.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. The word knucklehead's not in there, but it's a knucklehead provision, right? Like if someone's got substance abuse or gambling problems or they can't spend money appropriately, maybe they shouldn't get a large pile of it.
No.
Right, all at once. And when you have beneficiaries on documents, you lose the ability to have those rules. You want to be careful.
Well, especially with retirement accounts.
Oh, yeah.
Retirement accounts, people are like, well, I've got even people that make their kids the backup beneficiaries on their retirement accounts. If you've got a 2-year-old, right, let's just say husband and wife, young, they have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And they make each other beneficiaries on their life insurance. They make each other beneficiaries on their retirement accounts. And then they make those kids the backup beneficiaries on those accounts. Not a good move. Definitely not a good move because they would have, especially for the retirement accounts, if you leave it to the child, the court's going to appoint a guardian.
Yep.
Before they could even set up a trust to put that money in for those kids.
Yeah, and as Jane Marie will talk about at our client events, the new legislation may really impact what that means for a 2-year-old inheriting an IRA or a 42-year-old inheriting an IRA. We have Laura in Clifton Park. Hey, Laura.
Good morning. Yes, good morning.
Is it raining in Clifton Park or is it sunny?
It's sunny.
There we go. See that, Debbie? Told you. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, it was raining in Saratoga, okay?
A car and the title on a car. I was told that maybe I should put my children's name and the title, but I thought they probably would be responsible then if I were to have an accident, so that's not a good idea. So I called the insurance agent and asked that question, and they said, yes, they would be responsible. But they said it could be put in a trust, which I have an irrevocable trust. Have you heard of that?
We have. So let me ask you a question. How much is the car worth?
Well, it's 3 years old.
Okay. How much do you think it's worth? If Ben wanted to buy it from you right now, what has he got to pony up?
I have no idea.
What kind of car is it?
No idea. I don't remember. I bought it brand new, and I paid for it. It's paid for.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At least, you know.
Well, so, you know, the value really matters because, again, what we're focused on is like avoiding probate one day when you're not here.
That's right.
Protecting assets in case you need help along the way, right? And getting, you know, assets to whoever's important to you. And depending on the value of the car, we might be able to accomplish everything without you, moving it into a trust. Like, for example, when it comes to preserving assets for Medicaid purposes, you're allowed one car.
Uh-huh.
Unlimited value.
I do have, my trust is with you people. If I were to buy a new car, would that have to be then changed if I had made the change now with the old car in the trust?
Well, so you would presumably do something with the old car, like sell it. So Ben will like this. Your car is a pile of money shaped like a car. So if you sold the car, right, if the trust sold the car, now the trust has, you know, $15,000 more dollars and you buy another car, either with trust money or you buy it with your personal funds and you put it in, it's all, you know, it's all fine. Don't focus on that. My point is more of if you're always going to only have one car and Medicaid exempts one car, we're good on that front. If the car is less than a certain amount of money, a DMV affidavit after you've passed away can get that car to whoever it's got to go to. So it could really essentially avoid probate. And so I don't know necessarily what the benefits are of putting into a trust, although we certainly have clients that have done that. And we have a client from the firm down in Kingston who had a $1.5 million car, which we had to do a lot of planning for. So, you know, not all cars are the same. And you don't have a $1.5 million car, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, I should have asked at the beginning.
You got to be careful whenever you put your car in a trust because I've had a lot of times where people want to put their car in a trust and they talk to the insurance company and it increases their rate because okay. They're really not insuring a human anymore, even though, you know, it's your trust. They're insuring a trust.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea.
I think I just better keep it this way. And if they have to go to probate, what does it cost when you have to go to probate? That's probably changeable.
Well, if it was just the car, if it was under $30,000, then it would be a small estate administration. So the filing fee would be $1.
Okay.
With the courts. But like Dave says, you can transfer one car without having to go through probate as long as it's like, you know, not a multi-million dollar car. I think it's $30,000 car. It used to be $15,000.
Uh-huh. Well, all cars are worth $30,000, aren't they?
Well, yeah, most cars are worth more than that. But
no, I think this was too. Okay.
Well, they're worth more when you bought it, but as soon as you drove it off the lot.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for answering my question.
Laura, let me ask you a question. When's the last time you came to our office?
Probably 4 years ago.
All right. Well, it's probably time, and maybe we can go more in depth on this question and other questions. And see what else maybe needs to go into the trust or how everything is. The fact you already set up a trust means that the maintenance becomes even more important because it doesn't really cost much to maintain it or certainly to meet with us.
Okay.
That would be free. Okay. And we'll see you. Which event are we going to see at? The Marriott on June 26th or Glenn Sanders on June 25th?
When is the Marriott? What did you say again?
That's June 26th.
June 26th.
I'm penciling in Laura. Clifton Park is coming.
June 26th.
Thank you so much for your call.
Marriott on Wolf Road?
That's right.
Yep, the Marriott on Wolf Road.
I'm saving you a seat.
And what time?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's 2 o'clock.
It's 2 in the afternoon.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. I'll write that. I'm writing it down, too. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Have a great one. Nice job, Dave.
Thank you.
Nice job.
We'll personalize her coffee mug and put her name on it.
There you go.
I already said coffee mug. I just didn't say that it was purple. I mean, I'm kidding.
You know, you're so, no fun. You ruin all the fun.
No. So if you're a client, we'd love to see you at one of those seminars, all jokes aside. If you're a Kingston client or closer to the Kingston office, or June 20th is more convenient for you, we'll see you down in Kingston at the Best Western Plus. If Capital Region's better, June 25th at Glenn Sanders, June 26th at the Albany Marriott. The topics include 10 signs of Alzheimer's, and that's from the Alzheimer's Association, and they'll have a table at these events. They are a tremendous resource for families. And then the topics we'll be talking about, Harry, Jane Marie, Debbie, and I will be talking about setting up your grandkids, how to and how not to, and what to think about when you're giving up your assets, what's fair, what's equal, and which one should be best for you. Community Medicaid, what does it do, what does it not do, and why is it so important, and where the heck did it come from? Came out of nowhere, this community Medicaid.
Came out of nowhere.
That's what people think. They think,
well,
all of a sudden,
yeah, they're
this
like,
new
I've
thing.
Never heard of that.
No.
Is this something you're making up?
And then, you know, there's legislation already passed through the House. There will be changes to your retirements and what it means for your beneficiaries. And that can have a really big impact on how we plan now to preserve assets and kind of tax impact the different decisions you have. And that's a really, really important topic because, that's going to be changing the status quo for quite a while, I think. And if you'd like to see that one of those seminars, 518-465-7581. You can't make those dates and you want a free consultation if you're not a client or if you just want a checkup like Laura should be getting, you can call the office again, 518-465-7581. Yeah.
I was incorrect. I know you find that hard to believe.
No.
It's actually $25,000.
I thought it was actually 20, so yeah. I split the difference.
Yeah. It's 25,000. I looked it up. It used to be 15 forever, but it's like, where do you find a car that's worth less than $15,000?
That's where you go on Kelley Blue Book and you check fair condition instead of excellent condition.
Or poor
yeah,
condition.
Poor condition, yeah.
But yeah, it's 25,000. So if you have a car, so let's just say you did everything perfectly. You have a trust, you have beneficiaries. Everything's joint, and then you have that stinking car. And then you say, oh no, what are we going to do with the car? So if the car is individually in your name and you pass away and it's worth $25,000 or less, they can actually go to DMV and get a form and transfer it to the next of kin. But if it's worth more than $25,000 or you have more than one car, you can't use this form.
So then you would, depending on the value, or at least for the second car, it all, really all depends. You may have a small estate, you may have a big probate. And, you know, that's at a minimum what we really need all of our clients to do. We do a lot of estate administration at the firm. We don't enjoy doing it. It's a lot of work.
I like doing estate administration.
Oh, well, some of us, one quarter of the firm enjoys doing it. It's a lot of work, and what ends up happening is that clients oftentimes will say, well, I don't understand why this is taking so long. I don't understand why this costs so much money. It's all going to my siblings and I. It's not that complicated, Debbie. What's going on here? Well, you're dealing with the surrogates court. You're not dealing with Debbie Verney. You're dealing with the court, and we're representing you with the court. And they have rules.
Mm-hmm.
They have procedures. We have to follow them. They have a timeline. It could be really long.
Well, and if your siblings want to be, well, there we go. The end of the show.
You got to come to the client event to hear what Debbie was going to say.
There you go. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.